This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Roundtable. I'm Arnold Furious. I'm with Ollie Court.
Hey there.
As per usual.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try and keep it fairly brisk today. We're going to talk about Progress's most recent chapter. And we're obviously very, very, very fired up for WXW and 16 Carat. So we'll be talking about that as well. And possibly a couple of other things, but yeah, time permitting. So we're going to go right into it. No mucking around. No banter. Straight into chapter 44, Old Man Yells at Cloud. So this dropped, like, I think in record time, because it landed on the Friday. It's normally like the Sunday.
Yeah, normally so like the Sunday or Monday after. But yeah, quick turnaround this time, which is always good.
I don't know if they've had people complaining about that, but it's always nice for it to drop at the start of the weekend. Then you can kind of plan it in somewhere.
Sunday night is always a bad time.
So the show kicked off with James Drake against Damon Moser. Damon had an unfortunate accident in this match and had his jaw broken.
Yikes.
Yeah,
unfortunate accident makes it sound like he pooed himself or something. I think that's a bit more severe than just an unfortunate accident.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate. James kind of clocked him with a big elbow in the corner.
Yeah, right at the start as well.
So you just didn't see it coming. Maybe I don't know, something went wrong. But the weird thing was, he was clearly hurt in the match because, like, I think they finished early.
Yeah, and it was very quick.
He definitely talked to the referee about it afterwards, saying, "Look, I'm hurt." But he was in the pub afterwards. after the show, he was in the bar. I saw him. So I don't know. Maybe he just wanted to kind of take the edge off the pain. Didn't realize it was as severe as it was. But he ended up in hospital. Any thoughts on this? It was a very brief match. It was
very quick, and actually probably to its benefit, because like they started brawling on the outside and pretty much just kept brawling until the finish. So it stayed very high energy throughout. Never slowed down. Good intro to the show, and like obviously because there were a whole load of matches on the show, this one could never have taken up that much time. So it got out of the way early, and it was fun while it lasted.
It was a long show.
I
was surprised at how long the show was. So that was over pretty quick. And then we moved on to Natural Progression Series 4, first round match of Dahlia Black against Martina. Martina hasn't always been my cup of tea. And I think there's quite a few people that feel the same way. But she was really in her environment in this match.
Yeah, Progress crowd warm to her, definitely. Yeah.
Everything from like the entrance music to the glow sticks, and then like her behaviour once she started in there, that mixing it up with Jim Smallman and Chris.
Did they hand out the glow sticks, especially for her? Or
they were handed out. Yeah. A guy came around with a load of glow sticks, and Jim said these are for use in match number 2. as in, don't start waving them around immediately as soon as Damon Moser walks out. You have to save him. But no, it created a lovely little atmosphere there for him. It's a very strong debut, I thought.
Yeah, I think I'm into Martina right now. Obviously, she's coming off the OTT shows where she was somewhat of a headline act. I mean, the shows were named after her. Obviously, she's never going to be an amazing wrestler, but she's got antics coming out the wazoo.
Is that where she keeps them? I thought that's where she kept the cigarettes.
Yeah, cigarettes, whatever antics. Else she's got hidden down there. Antics. All the gimmicks. And yeah, Dahlia's doing really good stuff as well. She always has done. They both played off of each other really well. I'm very much enjoying the beer mist getting sold like death.
Yeah, that's the 4% mist. Yeah, I thought they had really good chemistry for I think it's the first time they've wrestled. I'm not entirely sure, but for like a first time at the box, I thought they did really well. TK Cooper, his antics in this were special as well. The way he was selling stuff, especially Martina riding him on the floor, and that there was some genuinely funny stuff going on there.
Touching Martina was sold like death as well.
Martina's lovely. I actually got the chance to talk to her after the show. I talked to Damon Mosier and I talked to Martina. Martina's really nice, like super, super friendly.
Yeah, she comes across as it on her interviews on the OTT YouTube. The in bed with the Martina stuff.
Yeah, so she's definitely on the good side of of wrestling personalities. So with some of them that have that kind of outgoing gimmick, you're never quite sure what they're going to be like in person, because I don't know. I've had bad experiences with people who are outgoing in the ring, but outside of it, they're just kind of they don't want to amuse anyone. They're just what am I, a clown? You know, it's like they're just going to shut down a bit. But no, she was bright and bubbly and friendly the whole night long. So big up to Martina, big fan.
Awesome.
That was a really good match. I really enjoyed that. The match after that was Travis Banks against Jordan Devlin, and I was really excited to see this because Travis has been doing incredibly good work, sort of hidden away almost in the South Pacific Power trip. You know what I mean? He's like,
second fiddle to by nature of TK Cooper and Dahlia wearing the face off of each other. Like, I think you're supposed to think Travis Banks is a bit in the background so that they can push him forward at a later time, which seems to be what they're doing now.
He was almost a sidekick at times.
Yeah.
Totally pushed to the forefront. A crowd immediately embraced him. I think having him against somebody as hated as Jordan Devlin helped, especially with the amount of mockery that was going on.
Devlin's doing great stuff. He walks into a room and everyone already hates him. Partly because WWE helped him get that exposure. They got over his heel character really well, and now he can use that in any new place he debuts in. But how can you like that face? His Lego head. Not a rootable face.
No, I just can't imagine him as a baby face. He's just so sour looking.
And he was for a long time, right?
He was in Ireland for quite a long time, and then they kind of turned him quite recently. I really can't imagine it there, though. It's one of those things where when somebody turns heel, you just can't imagine them as a face, and it's one of them things.
Yeah, really strong match. Easily the best of the first three matches here. Travis Banks, I thought, looked a bit better than Devlin. Like, Devlin didn't quite look on the level of Banks, but Banks is, like, probably world-class now. And just every match he's in is really good. So,
there was strong work from both of them. Technically, it was very, very good. I thought the strikes in this were just on point.
Yeah.
Everything looked right. It was...
Banks' selling of Devlin's strikes early on, he was, like, flummoxed and completely out of it. I thought that was really good.
It was the Enziguri as well, the one that he'd done in the the tournament against Martin Stone. Mm-hmm. He kicked him in the back of the head and opened him up. Now he's starting to use that as a killer move now, which is it's kind of good storytelling between promotions. But because Travis went down like face first into the canvas off that and stayed there for some time.
Yeah, it's amazing how, despite everyone saying that Devlin was crap in the WWE tournament, that he's now more over than ever, and like he's gotten parts of his personality and like his like that move specifically very, very over because of that tournament. Like just the way he worked out from that tournament, like everyone said that he was terrible in like Chinlock City, in the match with Stone, but he got the character over, so.
Yeah, he's come out smelling like roses.
Yeah,
but this is kind of the like if you'd only seen him in that tournament, and you'd only seen him in those couple of matches where it wasn't in any way a showcase for him. I think this is the kind of match where you can watch him and see what he's actually capable of.
Yeah,
very, very good match, and I think he was kind of enjoying the abuse he got. there was some quality abuse.
Yeah, they let him have it with the face. What is it about Irish people coming into progress and having one thing fixated on? Katie Harvey's sleeve and now Jordan Devlin's too big of a face.
He's massive head. That you're going to get your massive head kicked in.
Yeah, that's a good one. Good remix.
That was Galazzo Dan.
Yeah,
because I was standing next to him and he started it, and I went to join in and discovered that I couldn't because I was laughing, so I couldn't actually get the words out. But it caught on in the end. But credit to Galazzo for that one.
I also enjoyed TK Cooper's picture of Dahlia, because Dahlia was obviously resting up from a previous match. So
him kissing.
He then kissed to the camera the picture in the way that only he can do.
That was stupendous.
Yeah.
And he'd still got it at the end as well. He came out to celebrate and he'd still got the picture, even though Dahlia had come out. That was fun stuff. So yeah, that was a really good match. Tough to follow, but they went with the whole Sebastian William Eva thing. This felt like it was kind of over at Thunderbastard because of Eva finally turning on Sebastian and saying he'd had enough of his shit and slapping him and stuff. And it felt like it was over. So they kind of continued the angle here to its logical conclusion with Sebastian going to punish Eva for him, I guess, not following him at the last show. And out comes Chuck Mambo to tell him that he's basically free because Sebastian didn't press any charges for the alleged assault in Brixton, and the statute of limitations had expired. Basically, he couldn't press charges because it happened too long ago.
He was referring to a comic book throughout.
Yes. Yes, that was some top legal work. So that was basically there to set up the match that they had. And I get the feeling that it was kind of a bloodbath, that this was the match that they was going to have in Brixton in the first place. So I don't know if you remember Brixton, they changed the canvas. They had the canvas for changed after this match.
Yeah.
Or this match as it would have been in Brixton. So we kind of speculated that there was going to be a lot of blood in that match, and that's why they'd had it ready and then changed it.
Okay, yeah, that would probably make sense. And there was a lot of blood here. So
There was quite a lot.
And the match was definitely made better because of it. Sometimes in wrestling, having the Crimson Mask makes things that much more impactful, and William Eva wore it very, very well. And I thought William Eva's performance here was very strong. Just the images of him, finally defeating Sebastian, getting the monkey off his back, covered in blood, and he's got the right face for it with all that hair, and he can appear very sympathetic. So at the end of all this, I think he has been.
As well?
Oh yeah, he probably took a caning.
because
it kind of reminded me a little bit of Ginny versus Pollyanna when they used the cane and like whipped each other to hell. Similar scenario there.
Because this was really violent. But I don't know if it even came across that well on VOD, but like when he was when Sebastian was caning Eva, the cane was just shattering and bits of it were flying all over the building, and those lacerations that he had on his back were just horrific. I don't think it really showed up just how bad they were on tape.
Suffering for the art. All applaudits go to William Eva. Sebastian took a hell of a bump though off of the crucifix into the crowd.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. I was in the usual standing spot that we're normally in.
Yeah.
And I couldn't see either side. So all I saw was Eva going past with Sebastian above him. just running past in front of me, and then he's where's he gone? And then there's this massive as he went flying into the crowd. They must have gone like 5-6 rows deep there.
Yeah, it was fairly significant a fall. So the big spots in this match were very strong and looked very good. Everything linking them was complete nothing, I thought. It's just Sebastian is not a good wrestler.
No, I'd say this is probably his best match, but it was mainly because of all the brutality that was contained. Yeah.
Like, the spots were good, everything, yeah. Sebastian definitely has value, but he's just, I'd get him out of a ring, make him a manager, and then attacking him would mean a hell of a lot more. I don't know why he's wrestling, because he's just not very good at it. And if he's supposed to be like the wind-up merchant who they never can quite get to him, never quite gets his comeuppance, that would work a lot better as a manager. Whereas as a wrestler, he just gets his ass kicked and, yeah, whatever.
The match was not without issues. As you say, the transitions in it were pretty ugly. The bumping, again, was suspect. I don't know what else to say. It's like you say, he's not particularly good as a wrestler, but this was a really good match in spite of that.
it was as good as it was ever going to be. Like, they clearly planned this out well in advance and knew exactly what they wanted to achieve, and they got the images they needed to and made it impactful. And it's a good end to a terrible story.
And I like the way they kind of avoided a possible continuation of the story, because it all came about because of the lariat. So after he'd hit the lariat and he'd pinned him, did you notice he put him in the recovery position?
yeah. another little good image there.
It's all those little things like that that make wrestling.
They clearly planned this one out, and they did a very good job planning it out. Just as a wrestling match, it was kind of nothing, but as a series of pictures, a series of images burnt into my head. Yeah, very strong stuff. Not a fan of Sebastian on Twitter, though, calling all the crowd paedophiles.
Well, he specifically called me a paedophile.
Yes. Not sure how you feel about that, but I know obviously he's just...
It is what it is.
He's bantering it up and charactering it up, but it still feels a bit iffy to, throw those terms around at fans.
Well, I was kind of, because, he had the whole Nonsgate thing in Birmingham. Do you remember that? Mm. Where, at the Birmingham show, he called a fan a nonce. And I think it was mainly on the Facebook group. They were kind of moaning about it, saying he shouldn't use words like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he's a heel. Heels use words like that. So at the start of this, when they're doing the whole contractual thing with Chuck Mambo, and there's a big pause. I yelled, "You're a nonce," which you can hear that on the VOD. So I'd kind of given him the abuse, so he ended up giving it me back completely unintentionally. But it is what it is.
He's a heel. Hidden behind the big red pillar.
Yeah, I just happened to be there at the time.
Not actively avoiding Sebastian. Going
I'd,
to the bar.
I'd gone to I'd gone to the bar. I was just enjoying my beverage and leaning against the wall. But then the match started and I kind of moved around and watched it. So, and also I saw him in the pub afterwards and like Ed was there. Ed had posted the picture up that kind of got me in trouble with him.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was just sort of along from me on my right. And I was still standing there kind of ignoring him with the drink. So Ed pointed out that I was the guy in the picture and he just turned around and looked at me and said something about, well, you paid the money to see me anyway. And I was like, okay. that was it. But he was still working. And
Sebastian works everywhere. He went into the toilet one time and was like, telling everyone off for looking at his dick and et cetera, et cetera. Doing all the banter.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it.
He's a 100% worker, Twitter, real life, wherever. But I don't know, it just feels wrong to, you know, start throwing stuff around at the fans outside of the wrestling venue.
As somebody who should be slighted by what he said, I'm not, so...
Yeah. It is end of the story, though, for Eva and Sebastian, and we still don't know what the secret is.
I think I kind of forgot about that. Is it the same as Shane McMahon's locked box?
Yeah.
It was in the locked box.
The anonymous Raw GM. Consign it to history, put a fork in it. Let's never speak of this story again.
I wonder if it was that he was behind GTV. No?
It was Goldust, right?
Yeah, probably. Okay, moving on. We talked about that for longer than I thought we would.
So
obviously that was a big feud blow off, and I talked about how it was difficult to follow the Travis Banks Jordan Devlin match because it was really good, but then in the same way it was difficult to follow Eva and Sebastian because it was so emotional. So they kind of switched back again and had another match that was just exceptionally good, which was Mark Andrews and Shane Strickland. Did you enjoy this one?
I definitely did enjoy this one. It had very good progression. Like they came out and you would expect a whole bunch of flippy shit to start off and then them to sort of wind it down. Instead, they started it by doing very technical stuff and slow paced stuff.
It's like a feeling out process.
I really enjoyed that because you rarely see that from two flyers. Usually they go all out right at the start and then sort of slow down in the middle of the match. And here they built the whole match up from that low point. Or not low point, but like that slow pace, and they built the pace up rather than sort of doing a valley.
Yeah, it was very well structured, the match.
Yeah.
It was very... I've talked about how matches can be good regardless of how good the wrestlers are in them, but when you've got two wrestlers who are very good at a certain style, if they attempt harder things, then that makes it more impressive. And some of the things, the level of difficulty that was involved in what they were doing here was incredibly high.
Yeah.
The chances of something going horribly wrong were just constant.
But their timing was so on point, especially ending. Good. It ended at exactly the perfect time. The crowd was absolutely roaring in that last that 30 seconds or so. Like, definitely a very well-structured match.
Strickland flipped out of the... a reverse Super Rana, like he flipped out of it and landed on his feet. Yeah. Then he goes for his finish. That's counted, and then the SSP does it. So,
and it's all really of that flow stuff from one to the other. There wasn't any like dead air.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just one fluid motion, basically.
Yeah, well, that was pretty much the whole match. Like there was so many like sequences where that happened, and everything kind of flowed from one thing to another, and it just all made sense. Really enjoyable match. I thought it was the best match on the show.
Yeah, I would probably agree. Like, this was the super indie match. I'm not sure if they're going to have Strickland at Orlando. Like, that's a possibility. Yeah. He's doing a pro show, but...
Just afterwards, Jim Smallman asked him if he'd come and hang around with them in Orlando.
Ah, okay.
That was just after the match. I don't know if you...
Yeah, I must have skipped over it, but yeah.
Yeah, that happened. So he should be there. I'm sure they've advertised him as well on Twitter.
Awesome.
So that was that. That was the first half. It ran really long. It took like an hour and 40, I think. So I thought like they'd start the second half off with something really like quick and short, like they did the first half. But it was Nathan Cruz and El Ligero. It actually ran quite long. It was like over 10 minutes.
Yeah, I think this might have been the longest match on the show, actually.
Yeah, it seemed to keep going.
But I like it because really long it started off like you'd expect an El Ligero Origin Bandra Edition match to go. And then in the last 5-10 minutes, it evolved into something actually pretty good and like in on a work rate sense. Like, it was a load of fun and games to start off with, and then Ligero realized, well, actually, I want to beat the shit out of this guy. and they really started going hard.
Yeah, there was a lot of pissing about.
Yeah, including chance of piss about.
bag of Haribo. Ligero taping his thumb up, like trying to do the Amaga thing with the Samoan spike.
Yeah, thumbs up, Samoan spike.
Yeah. And the whole thumbs up, thumbs down,
yeah,
Batista thing, and then he had his mask ripped off at the end. So
yeah,
there's a lot
0 to 100 in terms of intensity
for a match that started off with Ligero calling himself a cross between Jush and Thunder Liger and an otter. something I want to talk about here, and that's Chris Roberts.
Okay.
Roberts is usually completely incompetent. That's his character. Like, he's useless. He can't do yeah. anything right. And yet, like, during this show, he constantly did the right thing. So he stopped Sebastian from attacking William Eva with the kendo stick.
Yeah.
And in this match, he stopped a chair shot, like dragging it off Cruz and getting it out the way. It
was like, a good legitimately night,
good referee, yeah.
He took a bravery pill.
Something like that, yeah. I don't know if it was on purpose, because it seemed to be like a running theme throughout the evening, but...
Yeah, well, he did miss Martino pinning Dahlia. So he wasn't completely incompetent.
He did have a lot of Stella in his eyes at the time. Yeah. So. It's a strong beverage. So yeah, I just thought that was really interesting that changed on this night. And he was like a babyface referee for Attack recently to oppose the evil heel Shea Purser.
Look at those rosy cheeks. You can't trust a man like that.
Oh no way. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how he's booked going forwards, because he's as important as anyone else in the ring. The things that he does make sense to a certain perspective.
So he definitely adds to matches. I think he's a top referee. Yeah.
I do make fun of Roberts because he does miss so many things, but the way that he does it is extremely well done.
Yeah, he's a very animated man. I did want to bring up Nathan Cruz. His win-loss ratio in progress must be absolutely in the pits, because he never wins ever. Like, he always gets his... He's like Chris Jericho. He's like, he gets his heat back immediately. But he never actually wins his matches.
I don't remember the last time I saw him win. I guess it was when they were the tag team champions. That was him and Ligero.
That was like a year ago.
It was. Well, it was Strong Style, wasn't it? They lost the belt. So it's coming up on a year, 10 months. That's quite a long time.
And I don't think he's certainly not won in singles in ages.
I guess they won at Brixton, didn't they?
Yeah. That's about it, I think, though, for Nathan Cruz.
It's credit to him that he's still got all the heat.
Yeah.
Because he has still got it all, and people do still buy him as a top card guy, so might as well. Might as well carry on jobbing him out, taking the piss out of him. So that was third from top. After that was Zach Gibson and Jack Sexsmith. This coming on the back of the Thunderbastard match, where Sexsmith was eliminated by Gibson after having a really good run. He's definitely improved, hasn't he, Jack?
Oh yeah, like I think something's clicked a little bit with him. Obviously, they've kind of rejigged his character a little bit away from the comedy stuff. Obviously, he's still got a little bit of that in him, but it's less overt. His matches aren't signaled as comedy matches anymore. He's definitely got that emotion behind him now, and he's delivering in the ring. I think he's obviously not like on the top tier or anything, but the level of like emotion he shows in the ring, very easy to get behind, and he's getting over right now.
Yeah, he's got an awful lot of sympathy, and it's very easy to get behind him.
Doing excellent stuff, excellent selling right now.
Yeah, the selling, the bumping, the timing of his kickouts, I think, is phenomenal. The way he gets that shoulder up at the last second.
He can ragdoll very well. Like he can just look like he's dead at certain points.
There are people who have made entire careers out of this.
Yeah.
Like, if you're really good at selling, then chances are everybody is going to want to work with you because they want to get all their shit in.
Yeah.
So I can see him being very popular with the other boys just because of the way that he works at the moment. Maybe not for sticking a condom in their mouth, but all the other stuff.
He'll sell if he gets to put a condom in your mouth.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed watching him. I thought this was a bit drawn out, but I did enjoy all the near finishes. Gibson, again, getting a huge amount of heat before the match. Yeah. I think people were worried that if Progress didn't put the title on him, that heat was going to wane a little bit. But, Jesus, how long has it been now? And he's still getting the same reaction.
Yeah, definitely. I think they may have to pull the trigger at some point. Just to buy him as a threat, but like they've protected him very well. Like he's always there or thereabouts, just hasn't quite got over the line yet.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do with him, because he certainly, his in ring is extremely strong.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it was a carry job here, but during the Thunder Bastard match, I thought there was a notable difference in quality between what Gibson was doing and what Sexsmith was doing. And I think Gibson was very clever in this match in the way that he kind of leveled that playing field. And it was subtle. And I know Jack stepped up as well, but Gibson kind of reduced what he was doing just a little bit, just to make it more believable. And I thought they had a really solid match because of it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. Definitely really liked the finish as well of Gibson just chucking him out of the ring, helter-skeltering him on the outside, and leaving him to the count out. Like, he wasn't even good enough to be pinned. But that also
got sick of the kickouts as well.
Yeah, that also subtly protects Jack, though, because obviously he didn't get pinned. He kicked out with a helter-skelter. And yeah, like, it protects him as well as making Gibson look like a prick. So, double good stuff. I will say I found it odd that the commentary were like with Jack's new nickname of the pansexual phenomenon, and they were saying that's why everyone calls him the pansexual phenomenon, even though this was the first show he'd used that name. I can't remember when Kofi Kingston suddenly had a new name, something sensation or something, and the commentary were like trying to get it over as what everyone, all the cool kids are saying it. It reminded me of that.
Yeah, you do get that in wrestling, though, because you want to get something across, and if you don't mention it, then it's not going to get over. But
I just found it funny. Sometimes it feels like I mention it.
I really enjoyed in this match, and it's a bit of a risky line for them to be treading, but when they had Jack get the crowd to literally support him by dragging Zach Gibson into the ring post. Groin first. If I'm Zach Gibson, I really don't want to take that spot.
No.
Because you don't know who's in the crowd.
Well, we saw who one of the people dragging him was.
Yes. Not going to mention
names. He who shall not be named.
He who hath me blocked. Yeah, I thought that was a bit of a risky decision, but it did kind of play into Jack's whole character in that
man of the people.
Yeah, it's like in football, he's got the whole 12th man behind him. He's got that crowd support, and that was a way of actually demonstrating that in the flesh.
I progress are a lot about visualizing things and getting that big visual over, and they definitely did that there, even if it may have been a little bit dangerous. Zach Gibson was fine, so we don't need to complain about that or anything.
Oh, no, I'm not complaining. I thought it was a
Yeah.
really clever spot, but at the same time, it's not something I'd suggest wrestlers do on a regular basis because that is asking for trouble, really. I think you probably get away with it in progress because of the nature of the fans, but they also are quite drunk. So you're kind of putting your life or balls in this case in their hands. Like I say, I wouldn't do it. So that just leaves the main event, British Strong Style against Jimmy Havoc, Mark Haskins, and Flash Morgan Webster. The stipulation on this match is that if any of the face trio got a pinfall or submission, that they would get a title shot. And when I was reading the stipulation, I was trying to figure out what that meant, whether it was a title shot at whoever's title they pinned. So if they like if they beat Trent Seven, would that be a tag title shot? I didn't really follow it, but I think it was just supposed to be a progress title shot.
Yeah, they never really made it clear, but it kind of
Not really,
pinpointed that
no.
Pete Dunne would be getting pinned.
Yeah, but they didn't really explain that too well. And also the other side of the stipulation was if one of the three faces got pinned, they couldn't have a title shot for 6 months, which brought us up to September and Brixton. So I thought, well, that's what'll happen then. Like somebody will lose, and that puts them out the title bid for 6 months. They get built back up, title shot at Brixton. Makes sense, right?
A
So
little
they didn't do
bit.
that. They didn't do that. I
They
thought it
did
was
not
really
do
weird. The
that.
six, like, why do that 6 month stipulation and then just don't do anything with it? It seemed a bit strange.
To put some stakes on the match, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, but if it was that, then why not just say, oh, a year?
To
Make it
get people talking
seem.
and wondering and thinking.
Yeah, because like 6 months, it just seemed very deliberate, like it was there to set up Brixton to me.
Yeah. Red herring.
Obviously. Were you happy with the outcome here? Because like Pete Dunne being pinned by Jimmy Havoc, that's Havoc at the title again, because they've already done that once.
Yeah, we've already had it, haven't we? I mean, they're doing it no DQ, so that should be a much better match than what they had just in singles. Now, that was an okay match, but like severely dampened by the DQ finish. And obviously Jimmy Havoc's in his element in the death match. I would have preferred seeing a Haskins or a Flash Morgan Webster get the shot straight out the
Yeah,
gate.
I kind of thought
I'm
that.
thinking Webster especially, because you could afford to have him lose and he would have a
Yeah.
killer match with Pete Dunne,
That's
getting
what I
really
thought was going to happen. I thought
yeah.
Webster wins because, like, he's the only one that hasn't held the belt. It would make sense for him to be getting a shot. You know he's not going to win it, but it should have been a good match. It would have been like one of these matches that would have slotted in nicely in between. Because obviously, I don't think they're going to change the belt this side of Strong Style, I don't think.
I don't think so. Maybe Will Ospreay interjects himself
Possibly in
in the
Orlando,
Havoc
I don't
DQ
know.
match.
I'm not sure. Not sure what's going on there. I
We'll
thought
have
the
to
match
wait
was
and
pretty
see.
good.
Yeah, the match was very much a progress main event in every sense. Like just a lot bunch of guys going out there and doing absolutely everything. Like ending the
Yeah,
show on
no
a really high
tags,
note.
no
Yeah.
rules.
No tags, no rules, just a car crash. I don't really like the British Strong Style spots where they do all the same moves at the same time. It just seems too gimmicky, I guess. But other
Little
than
bit.
that, like everyone was
I could
flying all
would
over
like
the
once
pit.
would have been fine.
Yeah,
If
but it
they'd
was
have
like an
done it
extended
once,
sequence.
yeah,
It was
they'd
like
come out
2 minutes
three
of the
times.
match.
An issue that I had here was that really early in the match they made it about Havoc, Haskins, and Webster all wanted to win, so they were breaking up each other's moves because they all wanted to get the pin. And then they kind of took that idea, which I thought was quite interesting, and just kind of threw it away. Because
For the
it's like
sake of
that was.
like match sense and breaking up pins and stuff.
Yeah, for excitement, in terms of like we gained a lot of fun stuff, but we lost the logic a bit. So I think that kind of hurt the match overall, because it didn't, like, it lost that logic that it had at the start.
Yeah, maybe they could have fought this match out a little bit better, thinking about that. Like, there was a lot of stuff that just didn't make sense going on here, and maybe a bit too much throw it at the wall and see what sticks. Like, Havoc kicking out of about 3 pile drivers in a row. I don't like
the Canadian destroyers.
I mean, it must have been very fun for the live crowd, but, like, watching it back on DVD, it did seem just like a lot of stuff that didn't make sense, I guess.
you certainly couldn't accuse it of being boring.
No, it was a lot of fun. It was a great way to end the show. I always say that about, like, the hot starts of the show, a great way to start the show. This was a great way to end the show with, like, balls-to-the-wall stuff. But in the long run, I don't think anyone will particularly remember this match as, like, a key point in the British Strong Style story.
Not really, but then I would watch it again. It's the kind of match that I would quite happily sit through again just to watch all the carnage.
Yeah. It was a proper progress car crash, and you can never not enjoy them.
Oh yeah, those are always fun. So I think it's a good way to end the show. I think the crowd got a little bit miffed because Havoc said he was cashing in his title shot in Manchester.
Manchester.
That was just like, Manchester? Fuck Manchester. So that was kind of the reaction. It was a bit weird. But do you think the makeup of the shows is that drastically different between Camden and Manchester? I guess it is.
Manchester always feels like the B shows. Just, it has that taint, I guess. Like, nothing that they've ever done. Like, they've always booked pretty solid cards. It's just, it feels less like progress, just a little bit. Like, it feels less important. Just, yeah. I can't really quantify it, but
no,
progress feels like Camden and London.
They have had great matches in there, but the card for the Manchester show, which is coming around pretty quickly, is shaping up really strongly already with what they've named so far. And I'm just scrolling down this because I can't remember the card.
Well, they've done the Pete Dunne, Jimmy Havoc for the Progress title in an ODQ match. And hopefully they do go crazy with that. Like, I want to see a proper Jimmy Havoc fuck shit up match.
All over the place.
They haven't really had one since he came back. His ODQ match with Marty Skrull got there a little bit, but it was still a bit not quite classic Jimmy Havoc. I want to see Jimmy Havoc do what Jimmy Havoc does best.
Yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it, since he had one of those kind of matches. Like the, I guess it was Paul Robinson, I guess, was the last time they had like a proper, like, that was
that,
a long
that
time.
That was a bloodbath.
Yeah, that was fun. So, still on the topic of progress, have you seen Freedom's Road at all?
I've seen bits of it. I've skipped over a couple of the episodes, like, picked out matches, picked out bits I wanted to watch. I've seen most of the backstage skits and then skipped over a couple of the matches.
It's been interesting. I think Travis Banks looked easily the best of any of them when it came to talking. Jack Sexsmith on the recent one I thought was pretty good too. The next set of tapings, Callum Leslie informs me, is going to have a lot of really good stuff on it.
Well, they've got Matt Riddle, so that should be fun.
I literally just scrolled past the lineup for it. Sorry, it's just loading. This makes great radio. they've got Roy Johnson, South Pacific guys, Earl Black, Daryl Ann, Laura DeMatteo, Ginny, Matt Riddle, obviously, Mambo, James Davis, Timothy Thatcher's there, Rob Lynch, the other half the rights, RJ Singh.
So basically the guys they usually have, plus the guys over the 16 carat.
Yeah. I could have sworn there was some other announcement on there as well, but that seems to be it. Yeah, I kind of lost track of my thought there. What were we talking about?
Freedom's Road.
we're wandering off.
Yeah,
wandering off down Freedom's Road. Shall we talk about WXW?
We should, because I'm excited and you're excited.
I'm excited.
We're going to 16 carat, and
yeah,
it's happening.
It is happening very soon. We're still not sure what we're doing from like a live perspective. We're going to try and tape some stuff like while in Germany.
I've got my voice recorder basically set up now, so we're just going to basically walk around Oberhausen and talking as we go. And hopefully that'll make good radio. We'll try and get some interviews in there as well, and obviously comment on each night as it happens. I assume our hotel will just be like Podcast Central. Like, we'll be battling with DKP down the hall.
Yeah, well, Alan's in there, isn't he? And I know Ian and Bo's Johnny are there. Galazzo's there. There's going to be a lot of good people there.
And a lot of good wrestling.
A lot of good wrestling, I expect. So I watched the show that's kind of linked... what am I trying to say? The lead-in show for it, which is Dead End 16, which was February the 24th. Some really good stuff on this show. A4 against Brooks and Travis Banks in the opener. I was kind of hoping Brooks and Banks were going to win, but they didn't. That was a really good opener. Bad Bones, Robert Dreisker. You were saying about Dreisker, how like... he probably wasn't going to lose, but he lost here.
So
he lost here, and it was because of Dirty Dragon coming out to try and offer him support and ending up distracting him and costing him the match.
Yeah, so more Cerberus drama there.
Cerberus is just falling apart. It's it's created some bizarre goings on.
Dirty Dragon... is on the Bushido Sound podcast as a regular, and he's very entertaining on that. So I'm a fan of Dragon.
He did commentary on one of the shows, I'm sure. One of the shows.
He's a very offbeat guy. He doesn't really fit the Cerberus gimmick, so getting him away from that and sort of doing his own thing and perhaps as a babyface is probably a good thing for him.
I assume Cerberus will remain a heel unit, but Julian Nero had a problem with him, and now Dreisker does as well, so that's pretty much it for Dragon, I would have thought. chances are he'll still be in the group when Carrot starts, but that'll be it. He'll get booted out. We've got Emil Satoshi against Michael Dante. This is another one that kind of caught me by surprise, because Satoshi won, I'd say, quite easily. I was kind of expecting Dante to put up more of a fight in that one, but maybe he's just not being booked by them going forwards, because he kind of got squashed.
Possibly. I guess they're building up Satoshi as well. So
yeah, I like Satoshi. It's a good spot for him. I like that snapmare driver he does. It's a really cool looking spot. And after that, we had Alpha Kevin and... Mel Gray against Alpha Female and Marius van Beethoven. This feud has kind of gone from being like this comedy aside to being this violent blood feud.
This is going to be a hell of a thing to watch at Carrot, whatever combination they're in. I'm not entirely sure, but
I don't know,
feud that permeates through the 3 days.
This kind of felt like it was the end of the feud, because they had like the faces won. But Marius kind of ran away and left the Alpha Female on her own.
Yeah.
So I'm not really sure where they're going with that. But it was another good match. Lots of carnage. Marius throwing a chair at Mel's face, getting thrown through tables. And it was getting choked with his own belt as well. It's just all kinds of chaos like that. So, I really enjoyed that one.
Mm-hmm.
After that, Bobby Guns against Damac. Not a lot going on there. Guns that has like gaping flaws in his work that I wish he'd do something about, because he's kind of a veteran at this point. And like he can do, and Damac's got the same sort of problems where like he's very good at flashy stuff, but like he's not so good at the basics. So you've got two guys who can't do basics, but can kind of do bits of flashy stuff. And it just, really didn't work for me. But yeah, he got busted open hard way under the eye, Bobby, that is. And but somehow came out with a flash pin. So, yeah. There we go.
Guns is in Ambition, if I'm correct.
Yeah. Like, he's not.
He'll see that.
Yeah, I think that's probably about his level. But yeah, he's. I don't think he's really good enough to be on these shows unless he makes some improvements. He had a very good match with Zack Sabre Jr., but it was kind of Zack just destroying him. So it was fun, but it wasn't like he really wasn't doing anything to earn like his half of the pay, apart from being beaten up. So after that, Alexander James from America, CZW regular against Ilya Dragunov. This was just a match to be put in here so Dragunov could beat someone. James is very kind of does a lot of very strong basics. He can structure a good match. Dragunov beat him. That was it. Afterwards, Dreiska showed up and squared off with Dragunov, and they kind of hinted that is going to happen at Carrot, which should be fun. Dragunov is a beefy Russian fella. He really is. It's just because he looks smaller than Dreiska. You don't kind of realize how big he is. That just leaves the main event, which is Ringkampf, Dieter and Walter against Jern Simmons and David Starr. This was really, really good. This was easily the best match on the show.
I've been seeing a lot of gifs of it. And yeah, it's getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah, David Starr was booked very strongly. Mm-hmm. He kicked out of all manner of stuff, was taking a beating off both the Ringkampf guys and coming away with his head held high. Eventually he got pinned, but it's the fact that he lasted as long as he did.
Yeah.
They had a lot of good storytelling as well going on there with Christian Mikhail Jacobi and Carsten Beck. They kind of fought during that. They've kind of hinted at issues within Ringkampf because Volta wants to be in 16 carats, and like if he wins, he's been told there's no team orders, so like he can go after Dieter. And obviously Jern is going after Axel Dieter, and it'd be interesting to see what happens in that match as well. Yeah. On night two.
Yeah, a couple of very big matches for WXW in the 16 carat weekend. But night one show will presumably be main evented by Volta versus David Starr. And they built that up really well. Starr's talked about how Walter was the first guy he faced in WXW, and he's never beaten him, keeps getting pinned by him. it's all building up very nicely.
Yeah, he got pinned again in this tag match.
And obviously night two main event for the title between Simmons and Dieter Jr. They built that up really well. Simmons is at the highest he's been in his run so far, like in terms of the quality he's putting out and how over he is. He's thriving as a babyface and should be an amazing atmosphere for that one.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. That night two title match is always good fun. So that is like we're hyped for WXW. If you're going, come say hi. We'll be there on weekend. I know there are a bunch of guys coming over from the UK.
Should we run down the tournament first round and say what we're hyped about?
Why not?
So, like you say, Dragunov versus Dreiska is one of the bigger matches in the first round. Who do you think is going to win that? Because that's a fairly big name falling out in round one.
That's a really tough call. I think Dragunov has more upside. He's obviously in better condition. Dreiska missed almost an entire year. I'm not sure if they want to put Dreiska through the tournament, given how much time he missed. And having him in this massive feud with Dragunov, it could help that's how he's eliminated. But I'll be interested to see how that one plays out. Who's your money on?
I'm thinking Dreiska. probably because he needs a bit more of a build than Dragunov does. And also, last year, Draisca missed out in 16 carat when I think he was on for a big run because he was injured. So I think they're going to give that to him here.
Yeah, I think a lot depends on how healthy he is. And yeah, they will be sure to check in on that.
ACH versus Mike Bailey for Flippy Do match.
That's going to be fun. I'm kind of torn here because I know Bailey's been there before, so like he's more familiar with everyone. So I kind of get the feeling that he's likely to advance because of that. ACH, however, is kind of a new commodity for them, and there's always a temptation to kind of push the newer, shinier thing. So yeah, I'm just excited to see the match. I think it's going to be a great match. And whoever loses that match is definitely going into the Flippy tag match on night two.
JT Dunn versus Marius Arlani. Two guys with a lot to prove here, I think.
Yeah, I can see Arlani winning. He's been very strong recently.
Yeah.
JT Dunn, they haven't used as much. Obviously, like him tagging with Hero was the big deal for him in WXW. With Hero gone, maybe he's not so much of a big deal, but it is a chance for him to prove himself.
Yeah.
He's
one of the guys who's replacing Bate Seven and Dunn here. So
yeah.
He does feel a little out of place, but I feel like he'll deliver. So like any doubts about him should be gone by the time he's actually wrestling.
I think Alani could be a real show stealer for this tournament though.
Possibly. They're definitely going to want to make him look really good. And he's been very impressive in the tag league and stuff. So
yeah, he's one to watch.
This is probably the most hyped I've ever been for a Timothy Thatcher match versus Koji Kanemoto. This could actually be really, really good. Because Kanemoto is not going to take any of Thatcher's shit.
It's just going to be stiff. And
yeah,
they're going to slap each other. And it's going to be fun. I kind of hope Kanemoto wins, but
probably not.
The outcome that I want is the outcome where I see Kanemoto the most.
Yeah, well, he'll be at night two and night three.
Yeah,
just maybe not in the tournament.
Yeah, however it plays out, I just want to see lots of Kanemoto.
Yeah, the American Nightmare, Cody versus the Mac.
It's going to be one of them three stars, isn't it? Three star matches.
Cody Rhodes is a perfunctory wrestler, is what I like to deem him as. I think he's a lot of fun in like tag matches because he exudes a star aura, but I don't think I've ever seen him like go above three stars in a singles match, so I can't hyped for him in 16 carat at least.
Maybe he'll get like fluke pinned and it's not gonna happen, is it? Yeah, I think he's gonna win here. Progress quite deep into the tournament. Like you say, he is very entertaining as like a bit player in tags because he is a star. But singles matches don't do a lot for me.
He gets exposed, I think, in singles matches, but like he can keep up with other people in like tags and like in like a maniac match like he had with Goldust in WWE. Those were his best matches because he was just flying around the ring, taking hot tags, going crazy. I think he's good at that. It's just when he has to wrestle a full like 20 minute match, it's when you realize he's not actually as good as he seems. But yeah, I do enjoy Cody on some level. I can say a lot of nice things.
I am looking forward to seeing him. Know why? It's because I know he's going to be over. And when somebody is like massively over, which he will be, it just adds to the atmosphere in the building. And I'm sure he'll be entertaining in his matches.
Yeah, he definitely has a star aura about him. So
I don't
think
I've ever seen him.
I saw him do a run-in in a dark match main event like 5 years ago. Like one of those ones where just everyone goes to the ring and hits their finisher. I've seen him then.
Okay.
We have Donovan Dijak versus Matt Riddle. That should be pretty crazy.
I kind of have mentally, I'm picking Riddle to win it. Because he is one of the biggest star names that's in there. If he isn't going to win it, he's going to go deep into the tournament. So I can't see Dijak winning. I can see Dijak being in the super fun tag match in night two. I can completely see that. I do like Dijak. I think it's a bit weird that the two Americans got paired up here, as well as what's the other match with like Bailey and ACH, both North American guys.
Yeah,
but I thought they kind of spread them out a bit better. But I'm sure there's plans afoot for later in the tournament. It's going to be good to see the Bro anyway.
Bad Bones, John Klinger versus Paul London. Probably most bizarre match of anyway. Yeah,
Paul. I'm just trying to think. The last time I saw Paul London live, I think he was tagging with Brian Kendrick on SmackDown.
I've seen him as the Spaceman, doing the Spaceman gimmick and fighting Kaylee Ray to a draw where they both pinned the referee. Or double winners, I think they called it.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I think Bones is going to have a decent run here. London, again, is going to end up in some kind of crazy tag match in night two.
Yeah. And then finally, I presume it will be the main event, Volta versus David Starr.
Yeah, the way they're building it up, I think they want Starr to win. But at the same time, it would still make good storyline sense if he didn't.
Yeah.
Because he's tried and he just can't beat Volta.
I assume in my mind that he's going to win and like really establish himself as a main event guy. But yeah, I could easily see him losing as well and just being like, fuck you, ring count for the best. and that would make a hell of an impact as well. So definitely hype for this one, whichever way it goes.
Still
it should be crazy.
Good logical sense.
Yeah. We don't have any brackets.
I'd like to see
anything.
Volta go very deep into the tournament. So that's my other reason for kind of wanting him to survive here.
We don't have any brackets of the tournament, so it's a bit difficult to predict exactly who's going to end up where. But who do you see as like a final four out of those 16 guys?
Jesus. Well, Riddle. I think.
Sorry for putting you on the spot.
Riddle. Whoever wins Dragunov and Dreiska.
Yeah.
I really hope Volta, because I kind of think Star losing is a better story, because it kind of just drags that story out. Like you can't get past him. And fourth guy, I honestly don't know.
I'll say Dreiska, Al Ani, Star, and Riddle. Conveniently forgetting Cody Rhodes's I don't lose clause. he gets rolled up by a space alien or something. I don't know. I'm thinking that because those are all like top level guys they want to push. And I think they'll want Matt Riddle going deep. And I want Matt Riddle going deep. So
that sounds wrong.
Yeah, I always find a way of phrasing things in exactly the wrong way. So yeah, I'm thinking, Riddle, Star, Al Ani, and Dreiska as my final four. That's what I am predicting on air.
Yeah, I'll throw Al Ani into the four that I'd said. I think he's a guy that they're looking at pushing, and I think he's really, really good. So I think he's a chance for a breakout here. Okay, so that was WXW. There were a couple of things that Rob wanted us to talk about. First of all, OTT. We did a big show on them last time. Talked about them for like an hour and a half, something ridiculous like that. But there is more to talk about with OTT, because since we recorded that show, they sold out Scrapomania, which is a 2,000 tickets for the venue. That's very impressive.
Oh yeah, definitely. And as Rob noted on Twitter, they did that in the shortest amount of time than any other current British indie or a European indie to get to 2,000. They've been around for only like 2.5 years, whereas Progress were around for 4 years when they got to 2,000 seats sold. And ICW were around for about 8. And obviously OTT have been like part of the Britrest boom. They've grown up around it rather than causing it like ICW and Progress did. So they didn't have, they had a lot more benefits and it was an easier time for them perhaps, but also the speed of that sellout to get to this point.
Well, their learning curve has been very, their learning curve has been very steep as a promotion. I think they're a little bit ahead of where they needed to be. what I was saying last time about them not having people to come into the spots, they're trying to rectify that now. They had two young Irish guys on the last show. So that they're obviously aware of their faults and they're trying to rectify those. But yeah, the 2,000 seats, 2,000 tickets. That's a lot of tickets.
It is a lot.
With ICW selling like 6,000, it kind of overwhelms what you, that kind of figure. But 2,000 is a big number. It's a very big number.
Yeah, so very impressive stuff by OTT. Irish wrestling is back.
Yeah, I'm sure there are other promotions in Ireland, but
there's finding the Cork, but obviously OTT is the big player.
The big boys. And the other thing Rob wanted us to touch on was Fight Club Pro, who seem to have abandoned their video on demand. All the best was February the 10th. And the turnaround on these things is usually about 2 weeks. And as yet, nothing has dropped.
Yeah, it's worrying. It's 4 weeks now since the show happened, and
it does kind of feel
a peep out of them.
Yeah, they haven't even mentioned it, so it does kind of feel like they're not doing it anymore.
Yeah, I mean that makes
sense.
Which
is unfortunate.
The promotion is basically built around Trent Seven, Tyler Bate, and Pete Dunne, who cannot be distributed.
And Dan Maloney. Yeah, basically all half. I mean, I said this when the deal came up that Fight Club Pro would be the ones that were most, had the most to lose from it. And not just with the guys that they're losing because they're under contract, but like with Nixon Newell leaving and they've lost Kimberly recently, is their promotion has been gutted. If they didn't use like Tyler Bates, Trent Seven, Dan Maloney, Pete Dunne on the live shows, then it would be like a threadbare lineup. They'd have to bring in imports just to make up the numbers.
Luckily for them, they weren't making much money off of the VODs anyway. They're very much a live show promotion. And
the prices have gone up for the live tickets. This has been notable on the last couple of shows that the price has been bumped up.
Well, that's justifiable when they're booking a shitload of overseas
stars.
Yeah,
for the talent they've got coming in, yeah, I can completely understand that. I'm not going to complain about it. It's always a good night out. But yeah, I'm kind of sad that All the Best won't see the light of day. It was quite a good show.
Yeah, very disappointed. I wanted to see CCK versus Kaylee and
Kaylee and
Nixon.
I think that was probably the best match on the show. The work that Kaylee and Nixon did towards the end, all the double teaming stuff was really good. That will not see the light of day now, unfortunately, but it was good.
I've got a first female Fight Club earmarked though, since that's a show that won't end at like midnight. I may actually be able to get back without having to bother someone else for a lift.
Well, there is the show on the... They're doing two shows, March 17th and 18th. I stupidly bought tickets to both of them. I'm getting a lift on the Friday, and then on the Saturday, I have to rely on transport. That is coming the week after I get back from Germany. So I'm getting back from Germany. They're forcing me to work the Friday and the Saturday because of not being there for the start of the week. So I'm basically screwed. I'm going to look complete. If you see me at either of those Fight Club Pro shows, I'm going to look absolutely fucking shattered.
Your time will
be
enjoying very
much myself.
Disheveled.
Disheveled, off center. I'll probably be like, you know, huge bags under my eyes, but Also, Jack Daniels in hand and having a good time. Is there anything else we have to discuss?
I don't think so. Obviously, see you in Oberhausen if you're going. Say hi to the microphone.
this is, I believe, a scoop.
Oh.
And I'm not 100% sure on this because all I have is a message that says CCK did it. Keeping in mind, CCK, as we are talking, are going after the tag titles in Rev Pro. So
boys did it.
I think that might be happening right as we talk. So I'm just going to have a quick look.
Live at the Cockpit is going to be an enjoyable experience. And you can read my review of it when it's up on Voices of Wrestling. Quick cheap plug.
There's a plug there. I've done that WXW show and the Progress show. So the two that we talked about tonight, they are both going to be on Voices of Wrestling. I've written those. And I guess we're splitting the 16 carat reviews because Rob is like a rod to his back, has decided he's going to take on the WCPW shows.
A hefty weight to carry for Rob.
Yeah.
I do not envy him.
It's like Jesus with the cross. It's way up the mountain. I've forgotten the name of the...
He decided to review WCPW for our sins.
Yeah, he agreed to do like one show and I think we just kind of got stuck with it. But... So before we head out, you could head over and check out rearviewreviews.com, which is my website on the side. That's where my reviews turn up when they're not on Voices of Wrestling. And you can follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious. Ollie.
You can follow me at Another Ollie. Check out British Audio Wrestling, which is my piece on the side as well.
I've got a bit on the side.
Read the Euro Notes in F4W newsletter every week. It's good.
What a plug. It is good. And on that note, we are done, and we'll see you in Oberhausen. Good evening.
Good night.